Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the Western Hunting Hub podcast. This episode, I have Travis O'Shea from Wapiti River Outdoors. So another Canadian to add to the mix for some of these recent episodes I've had. And this one was great. Have some elk calling scenarios. Gives his style. And I know Travis is known for his chuckling and using chuckling. So a unique approach to calling elk that he has found to be successful. Definitely another also kind of patient method. So this is definitely worth the listen, as a lot of us are traveling to go to elk camp, get ready for elk season. And I wish the best of luck to all of you. Again, thanks for listening to this podcast and the support that you guys have shown. There will be a couple of new coupon codes, one for Ridge Patrol coming up here pretty soon, one for Wilderness Athlete coming up pretty soon. And just always a big thanks to Onyx for supporting the podcast and making sure I got a membership. And yeah, so thanks again for everyone listening, and enjoy this episode with Travis. All right, Travis, thanks for jumping on the Western Hunting Hub podcast and talking elk hunting, elk calling with me. And just did a little research on you and saw a few things. See, Wapiti River Outdoors is your company organization. If you wouldn't mind, just tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe about the company, your organization, what you do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Clint. Yeah, basically, I live up in Grand Prairie, Alberta, and been chasing elk for basically my whole life, ever since I was a little kid. Just got into the calling thing. My dad was an elk caller, so I kind of went on my own once I got old enough. My dad got me an elk read. I remember back in the day, it was a long time ago, but it was a Wayne Carlton elk read, and I just started playing with that. Me and my cousin actually started learning how to do the sounds together. And, man, that was 25, 30 years ago now. And here, lo and behold, now I run my own game call company called Wapiti River Outdoors. And literally, I still build every single read myself, and my wife does all the packaging. And I do have one pro staff, Dylan. He helps me build some of the easier reads. Mm-hmm. And other than that, just the three of us kind of building and putting them out. We sell them on our online site, and we also supply a bunch of stores as well.
Excellent. So, mouth reads, any other products you got, or is that kind of the extent of it?
Yeah, we do the mouth reads, and we have just one external call, just a bite and blow, mm-hmm. and then just the bugle tubes. That's kind of what we focus on. We do have a small lineup of turkey reeds, but we're not huge into turkey up here, so we try to focus mostly on elk stuff. Follow our passion is what we do here.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about maybe you're the third Canadian I've had on the last like 3 months. So we're really hitting up the knowledge up north. We had Greg McHale on, and then also was chatting with Marcus Simmons not long ago. So a few of you guys up there and bringing some knowledge to us dummies down here. So we need some.
Yeah, actually, and Muck's on my pro staff as well, so that's cool.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Yeah, he was. Just chatted with him the other day. I don't even know when. Great guy, great conversation. And I don't know which one's going to come out first. I think this one might. We'll see, because I need to make sure people have this in time for September elk season, as that's kicking off here very soon, or as by the time this launches, maybe even we're a couple days into it. So, what's your plans for the fall as far as hunting season goes?
Well, I got one more day of catching up, fielding store orders and calls for everybody, and then our season literally kicks off on Thursday here, August 25th.
Wow.
It's opening morning. So, yeah, it's coming fast.
Well, I extra appreciate the time right now. If you're filling orders, doing that, and you got season rolling in literally a day or two, thank you for that.
Yeah. And you know how it was this morning? We tried to hook up this morning, and I slipped away real quick for an hour shooting my bow, and then that turned into, oh, crap, I forgot all about my phone and everything.
No, that's the way it's supposed to go, though. We shoot our bows, and we're all supposed to stop or just shut off for a little bit, and that's why we do it.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Yeah, so I guess my brain kind of needed the rest.
Yeah. Yeah. So, sorry, I interrupted some more. What's the fall looking like?
It's looking pretty good. Going to be busy for the first couple of weeks of September. I'll be hunting around home here with buddies and stuff like that. The first couple days for me is going to be solo hunting. Just going to go hit a couple of the bigger bull bedrooms that I know of and try to sneak in and see if I can draw one of them out. And then basically I'm kind of lucky. So the mornings I'm going to hunt, and then I'm going to jet back home because I'm literally only an hour from my hunting spot where I live. And so I'll jet back home and keep filling store orders and do as much as I can. And then I have a couple buddies that are on a sheep hunt right now. They're going to be about 5 or 6 days, and then they'll be coming up to do an elk hunt with me as well. So there'll be three or four of us roaming around together. We're trying to film everything this year for, you know, trying to get the real close call-ins. And how we do it, we like to use scenarios like breeding sequences and tending sequences, stuff like that, just to make it a little more fun. And the elk that we actually hunt up here are fairly pressured. They see a lot of people calling to them. Mm-hmm. But most guys are just calling, bugling, and walking along, and they don't really have the patience to sit down and wait for a while and actually call something in. So those guys, they just call and they move. They call and they move. Whereas us, you know, we'll be in one spot for, I try to stay in one spot for an hour, hour and a half, just doing a calling scenario and see. A lot of times those bulls just sneak in. Sometimes they come screaming in. So you just never know.
Man, I can.
So that's going to.
I literally could have a different elk hunting conversation on calling elk every season or every episode of the year, and everybody else has their own style of what they like, and that I just appreciate that. I think that's pretty neat.
I think that's the best thing about elk hunting. You know, there's no right or wrong way to use an elk read or an elk call or a bugle tube. And there's so many different tactics and strategies. And I mean, I guess, you know, like I've been hunting elk and calling elk for better part of 40 years, probably. And, you know, you're still amped up every year just to get out there, and opening day is coming. It's like, holy crap, I can't wait. I can't believe it's here. It's like the best month of the whole year, you know. To most of us elk hunters, in September, obviously. So
yeah, and
it's better than Christmas.
Yeah, I totally agree. My birthday is right in November, and it's been a goal of mine for years to shoot a deer on my birthday. So I just November's.
Oh yeah.
I with the deer rut and my birthday right in there. It's like it's a great month. I love November. Love November.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I don't think I could choose between elk hunting and deer hunting, mule deer hunting. I got to have them both to switch back and forth. I look forward to each one because elk will drive me nuts, and then because they just frustrate me, or I can't find them, or I can't do what I got to do. And so I feel a little more confidence moving over to the mule deer, and it's just, well, you know, it's just one of those things. But I'm taking a look at kind of where you're at roughly just to understand some of the terrain. It looks like you're in a little bit of oil and gas country, which is similar to some country I hunt in northwest Colorado, but you're not far from the big mountains too, the sheep country. And just describe real quick the terrain that you're hunting, and so that we could maybe compare some of that to the type of country we got down here in the lower 48.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. We're we're primarily oil and gas and logging where I'm from. We're basically I'm literally an hour and 20 minutes from the British Columbia border. So we're right along the foothills of the Rocky Mountains is where we are. And so basically our terrain is, the lowest parts are obviously the rivers. And then we have the big foothills on each side of the rivers. And we do have on top of the hills, there's a lot of agricultural farmland. So most of that stuff, you got to have permission. It's all private land, but all the bush in between and down by the rivers, that's all what we call crown land. I guess you guys call it forestry land. Sure. You know, everybody can access it. You know, it's free for everybody. You know, a lot of it's walk in. A lot of our oil lease roads, they have gates on a lot of the stuff, so you can't drive in. But you can, if you're lucky enough to have an e-bike or a quad or something, you can quad around through the trails. Like, our bush has a lot of cut lines and stuff that intersect north and west and north, south, east, and west. So you can always hit lines wherever you want to go, kind of thing. So access is not that hard. And then, yeah, you're basically just bugling from the ridge tops down into the bowls, trying to locate, you know, as many elk as you can. We do a lot of stuff on the, we use the oil lease roads as much as we can and try to get up on those, and you can travel along on those and locate elk a lot quicker than just hiking the hills. So our bush is super, super thick here, so you don't have the luxury of going from, I guess, from one bowl to the next bowl very easily, because it's pretty far to go to, you know, through each bowl kind of thing. And our elk population is not as high in numbers as a lot of the states in the, like, I don't know how many elk are in Colorado where you hunt. You know?
It's in that like 250,000 roughly.
Oh, okay.
Plus,
okay,
yeah. In Colorado, plus or minus 10,000, I think. 20,000, yeah. Somewhere in there. But where I actually live in western South Dakota, where we have a total of like 7,000-8,000 elk. So not very many at all, but that's why I go over to Colorado. Colorado is the most populous elk state. But they're in that mid to somewhere in those 200,000s.
Yeah. Okay. So to give you kind of the numbers that we have here, Alberta, we're sitting right around 27,000 elk. And then if you go into BC, I think they're sitting around 36,000. So we don't have like huge, huge numbers. But we don't see like a lot of those herd bulls in Colorado probably have, you know, 20, 30, 40 cows with them at certain times. Whereas our bulls here, most of them will have between, well, honestly, like they can have as few as two cows up to like 6 or 10, usually at the most. So,
oh, wow.
Then in Alberta, we have most of our areas a 3-point zone, but we do have some of the areas are 6-point zone as well. So that's kind of a struggle for those guys that hunt the 6-point zones, because the 6-point they get really hard. They get hunted so hard that they're all taken out, and if you don't have the right genes in your pool, basically everything starts being a 5-point. And these guys struggle, you know, there'll be 100 guys hunting 2 or 3 6-points in their zone kind of thing. So that's the hard part.
Oh, that is kind of lucky. Interesting. That's really interesting, because it's probably meant to be a management tool of make sure we get some good quality animals, but it gets hunted too much. So you remove all the 6 points so they're not breeding, and you end up with bad genetics. That's interesting. And I just looked up, we do have 280,000 plus animals in Colorado, according to Colorado Parks and Wildlife. So definitely a lot. There's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot. That's, That would be awesome.
Well, you get that, and we'll joke about the million hunters that are hunting them. I don't know. How many elk in Colorado? How many elk hunters in Colorado? And we're going to end up with well over 200,000 hunters who purchase elk tags in Colorado, according to a quick Google search.
That's right, and that doesn't even account for all the cougars, the grizzly bears, the black bears that are taking calves, and then all the wolves that are that are pounding on those herds as well, right?
So. And that's a brand new, not brand new, but that's a whole newer subject in the last couple of years of how Colorado passed their legislation to introduce them, and even though they're there, and now there's a big political piece to that, and it's a mess. It's a total mess. So I honestly a little more concerned about the moose than the elk.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Because Montana's the elk hunting is still good. Idaho, the elk hunting's still good, but I know they've got their struggles, and it's the moose that Colorado has such a growing population of moose. It's just growing and growing and growing, and they keep pumping out more and more moose tags. And the Hunt Osiris moose in the lower 48 that's a huge goal for people, and they'd love to do it. And we're really increasing opportunity. And I'm probably never going to draw one. I would love to, absolutely love to. And I'm just going to keep putting in, and we'll see. Hopefully I get lucky, but I've got buddies saying you're dumb, don't waste your time. It would be cool if that were a more prevalent thing.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you could probably put in for that draw for what, probably 15 or 20 years and still not get drawn.
20 or 30. Yeah, I'd have to look at what the highest points are at for moose, but I bet it's in the 20s. I know our highest point creep in Colorado for deer or something is at like 32. Something right in there. Wow. So there's some places that it's just, even you put in as a youngster, your chances are low by the time you're of age. But I've said this before, it's like that point creep keeps going up, more and more points it takes, but it has to cap. It could never be 100.
It can never be 100.
And that's where you see some changes happen with how many tags they allow non-residents. And like a Nevada just did a big deal, or no, New Mexico did a big deal about reducing the number of sheep tags available for non-residents. And that's probably what they have to do with that, so that their residents can actually maybe get that opportunity someday.
So otherwise they're going to face so much backlash too, right? That would be the other side of
it. Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You can only imagine the phone calls they get every day.
Yep. I work in one of those offices here in the state, and it's nonstop. You can't make everybody happy. You cannot. And, our state is definitely you can only hunt elk if you're a resident here. Because there's only 7,000 elk, and so you got to be a resident here, and it takes an average of 17 years to draw a tag, a bull tag. So to learn how to hunt elk, you got to go elsewhere, and to look at opportunities, you know, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana offer that. So that's where I head, and what I plan to do. So on that topic, love to hear maybe just some of your calling techniques. And we started talking about that a little bit, that you spend some time in one place, and maybe give us some scenarios of, or maybe your game plan for this year of where you're, not exactly where you're headed, but a spot that you're headed to, and what that spot is like, and why you are going to choose or make the decisions you're going to make based on what you see.
Yeah. So, like I alluded to at the beginning there, I'm going to hunt the first three mornings for sure, just solid solo hunting. And the reason I'm doing that is... sorry, that's my dog.
Oh, good.
You're okay. You're fine. I'm going to hunt the first three mornings just solo, and I'm going to hunt the bedroom. So when I'm out scouting, you know, in prior years when you're out actually hunting, I'm kind of scouting the whole time that I'm out there as well. So I'm looking for those areas that are really rutted up. You know, there's trees that are just tore, you know, just rubbed everywhere. And when I find that spot, I'm kind of looking to see how many trees are tore up in that one little spot. If it's a thick little bush area, like, I'm kind of looking for their bedrooms is what I'm looking for. So you can find those basically to be a little spot that's, you know, 40 or 50 yards around kind of thing, but every tree will be rubbed. And that's where the bull is kind of hanging out, you know, this time of year, especially as they're rubbing the velvet off, getting ready for the, you know, to go start looking for the cows and stuff like that. So I'm going to head into those areas and see if I can pull one of those bulls out, because they're usually the bigger bulls that are in their solitary bedroom like that.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm scouting, I'm kind of just literally watching for those little spots and putting them in my memory bank. And then, because what happens, even if you go in this year and I shoot one of those bulls out of there, another bull is going to take that area over. So there'll be another bull in there next year. So if you can put these little spots in your memory bank or mark them in your Garmin or whatever you guys use to mark stuff, just keep those spots private to yourself, and you know they're going to probably produce year after year. So that's okay. Kind of where I'm going to head the first couple mornings for sure.
Okay. Got it. So some heavy bedding area, heavy rubs, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you're not going to see any cow. There's not going to be no cow and calf stuff around there. I'm literally hunting just the secluded bull because he's in his bedroom right now doing his thing. And, you know, even some of the bulls are probably moved out already, and they probably got little harems of cows already. Some of the bulls, they might have three or four cows already. Mm-hmm. But what I'm noticing out of my trail cameras, because we use trail cameras here as well, most of the bulls here are still in velvet or just starting to rub. So, I mean, it changes overnight. You could have, you know, 100 bulls that were in velvet yesterday. They could be all hard horn today kind of thing. But
yeah. And those you know, bulls that would be grouped up right now or starting to might be some of them younger bulls though too, wouldn't they? And those bigger bulls are going to come in later on, and when they're ready, because they don't have to jump the gun, they'll just kick out whoever.
That's right. Yeah, you're 100% right. Those littler bulls are going to be with the cows and stuff right now, and you're right. It's going to be like the little 3 or 4 points, and where I'm kind of lucky, you know what? I'm in a 3-point zone here, so anything with 3 points and up is totally legit to throw in your freezer. But, you know, you kind of have to set your what you want. Do you want to fill your freezer, or do you want to go after a big bull? So for the first couple of days, I strictly kind of want to chase a bigger bull. And then after that, if I'm not successful, then, you know, any little 3-point bull will work, or a 4-point, something like that. You know, it's obviously going to be a lot tender meat, so your freezer is going to be a lot happier anyways.
Mm-hmm.
but it's for the thrill of it, because I'm strictly an archery hunter, and I'm out there just, I'm trying to match wits with those bulls with my calling, you know. And honestly, there's a lot of 5 and 6 points that get a free walk, because, you know, you call them in, and it's, maybe it was not as glamorous of a call-in or something like that. And it's like, you want to keep going on, or, you know, maybe it is the first day and the 5-point comes walking in, you know, but you're not ready to quite feel that tag yet. So, but having said that, I'm pretty lucky. Like, I get to hunt. Well, our season's pretty generous here. It's a couple of months long. So, oh, I mean, wow. I don't really have to run and take a bull, the first bull that we call in. So, so I like kind of playing with them and testing my calls on them, and really, you know, throwing out with different scenarios and, you know, some tending sequences, breeding sequences, stuff like that, and just play with them. And I really like to see the reaction, because what happens with most guys are scared. Once they see an elk coming in, once he hangs up at that 40, 50, 60 yard mark and he's just standing there, most guys freeze. They don't know what to do, right? And so what I kind of do is, because I put a lot of seminars on, and I'll teach people, you know, like, still whatever calls you were using to bring them to that point, keep using those calls. And everybody kind of looks at me and they go, well, keep calling to him. Like, he's looking at you. I'm like, well, keep calling to him. You know, he's just an elk, and they work on instincts is how mm-hmm. how an elk operates. So once you tell these guys, you know, keep calling to him, you know, chuckle to him, bugle to him, break a tree, you know, do stuff like that. That bull's just going to keep coming in closer and closer. He may kind of start skirting around you a little bit, but at least you're going to get him into like 25, 30 yards versus that 60 yards where he hung up on you.
Yeah.
So, and once you tell him that, you know, because you know how elk are, they can pinpoint you to the,
right,
to the meter, right? Exactly where you're standing. But even though they're coming in on you and they're close like that, if you really look at an elk really close, when you're calling to him and he's looking right in your direction, they're really looking right through you because he's looking for a real elk that's making those sounds. So to him, you're just a stump that's in the way. And if you really look at their eyes, you can see that he's kind of looking right over your shoulder. And so it's really cool to interact with those bulls and keep calling to them and see what they do. And so that's kind of what gets me going. It's,
yeah,
I don't shoot an elk every year because I elect not to. But I just, that's the fun, you know, I want to see what calls work and what calls don't work and, you know, and have fun with them and, you know, see if you can fool a lot of the younger bulls like that as well. But I want to see if you can fool like the bigger bulls and, you know, the big and 6 and 7 points and see what they do. Do they act any differently? Which for the most part, I can tell you they don't. They just, you know, they're a little more cautious in some cases. And then you get some of those bulls that are super, super aggressive and they just come stomping in on a string kind of thing. So You never know what you're going to get. Pretty awesome.
Wow. So you're covering these roads, the oil and gas roads, these covering ground, locating elk. And as soon as you have located an elk down in, or a bull down in a little pocket of some sort, what's your game plan after that? And let's go through some actual calls and calling sequence and what's your game plan?
Sure. So what I like to do is I like to get down in there, and not too often will I call right from the very top of the ridge, because, you know, it's first thing in the morning, the air is cold, you know, so it's falling. And even here, the ridges, we have to really watch the thermals a lot. Mm-hmm. So they usually change. So what I'll usually do, I'll get on top of the ridge. I'll kind of sit there for 10, 15 minutes, just surveying the situation, listening for elk to see if they're bugling all on their own, you know, without having to make a peep at all. And then if I don't hear nothing, I'll usually drop down. Like our hills kind of have benches, and it's basically you can drop down maybe like 30 or 40 yards and you'll be on a bench that's right below the top kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how the benches just keep doing that. Every 30, 40, 60 yards, there'll be a different bench kind of thing with a little flat. And so that's where the elk are going to eventually be on one of those benches. So I'll kind of start at the top, and I'll basically just, if you're just throwing out, if, you know, especially if it's early season or something like that, I don't go in, you know, too aggressive. I'll usually throw out a little chuckle and just kind of search the area that's right out in front of me with like a nice quiet little chuckle. Nice thing about a chuckle is it's an invitation call. So you're inviting cows, you're inviting calves, you're inviting bulls over. Nice thing about that, if you can call the cows over, there's a pretty good chance there's a bull that's following those cows, and vice versa. You know, if like a lot of our areas here, we actually have through archery season, you can actually shoot a cow or an antlerless elk if you want. Not so much once rifle season starts, that turns more to a draw situation like what you guys have.
Yeah.
So you have to draw after that for rifle season, but you know, through archery season, it's not so strict. So if you want to shoot a cow, you can. And if you want to wait for a 3-point bull, you totally can. So, you know, calling in those cows, there's going to be lots of the little 3 or 4 points that come following in them as well. So,
yeah. So with that chuckle, it's just a lone chuckle. Not a locate bugle followed by a chuckle or a something like that. Just a lone chuckle.
Yeah. So the two situations that I use is either if I am standing up on the ridge and I do hear a bull bugle all on his own, I'll usually drop down to that second ridge and I'll give a cow mew, and then I'll usually wait about 5 minutes and then I'll do another one. And the reason I do that, so here's just the basic cow mew, what I would do. You know, nothing fancy, just mm-hmm. a basic cow mew. Then literally just sit there and wait for about 5 minutes. You know, try to listen to what that, where he is down there. And after about 5 minutes, I'll give another mew exactly the same. And I'll be really listening for him to chuckle or grunt or bugle back. The reason being, I want to see if he's actually moved his location from the first bugle that I heard him do. So you'll know if he's moving to the left, he's probably going somewhere to the left of you to a different bedding area or something like that. But then you also know if he's also just staying in that one spot. He's probably, you know, he's an advertising bull. That's why they're staying in that one spot. He's probably got a cow or two or three or four with him already. So, but then if he's coming towards you, it's probably a lone bull that doesn't have cows. And he's probably coming just to check out your cow call. So I'm kind of really paying attention to the surroundings going on around you. You know, is he moving to the side? Is he coming towards you? Or is he staying there? And that's going to dictate kind of your next move after that.
Okay. So, yeah, let's just pick one of those scenarios and, go through that.
Yeah. So if it's a bull, that's just coming, if you notice he bugled and then he's bugling closer to you, he's actually coming into you. That's when I would stay with your cow and calf stuff and just really stay nonchalant with it. Don't just start calling like lots and lots to him. Just keep it pretty minimal. You know, just throw out a cow mew every, you know, 4 or 5 minutes kind of thing. Let that bull come in searching for you. And as he gets closer, he's going to be bugling along the way because he's trying to call you over.
Mm-hmm.
So you can really just go quiet on him and let him come searching for you. So what I would do in that situation, I would literally, after he bugled, I would throw out another cow mew. And then since I'm probably going to be by myself in that scenario, I'll try to bump up 20 or 30 yards if I can. And that's when I'll go silent. I'll just let that bull come in searching.
So at this moment, I was just thinking at this moment, we've got, he knows there's a cow over there somewhere on roughly his level or just above or something like that.
Yeah.
He knows there's a cow, but he also knows there's a bull somewhere, because of that chuckling earlier on. And so are you strategically, are you limiting the amount of bull vocalizations and focusing on just the cow? Or is that, and I'm jumping the gun here, is that bull going to come back into the scene?
No. So I'll have two scenarios that I'll play out when I go in solo like that on a ridge.
Okay.
One will be just the cow calls, and the other scenario will be the starting out with the chuckles and like keeping the cow stuff totally out of it.
Okay, got it.
So it just depends how you feel that morning. You know, were the elk pretty vocal through the night kind of thing? Were they quiet? How are you feeling that day? Are you kind of a little bit tired? You just want to throw a cow call out, or do you want to get right into it and get chuckling and bugling and stuff like that, right? So I kind of throw it out like that. Depends how I feel that day. Myself, I like bugling more than cow calling and stuff. I just find it a lot more fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm one of those guys that if I'm not bugling, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So So that one scenario was just a couple cow calls. The next scenario that I prefer myself is the chuckling one. And I'll just do a little chuckle here for you. So you got to remember, I'm just hunting the area that's just kind of right in front of me to start out. So it's a pretty quiet little chuckle. Sounds something like this. You know, really nonchalant, nothing really to it, just a nice little cadence. And then with that, I'm literally staying in my one little spot and being silent for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. And you're really listening, you know, your ears are straining, you're trying to hear antlers knocking on the side of a tree, or you're trying to hear some panting, or maybe he bugles or chuckles back to you. But if he doesn't, then in that 5 minutes, you know, if I've kind of waited 5 minutes, I'll literally do another one. Because sometimes these bulls, especially here, they don't just fire back to you right away. They've been around the block a couple times, so they kind of want to make sure that you're an elk before they answer back to you. Yeah. So I'll wait 5-6 minutes, and then I'll give another little chuckle. But that next one, I'll go just a little bit louder.
Okay, so that's what I was gonna ask. Like, you hear so many different variations of chuckles, and that's probably comes down to people's ability of everybody's chuckle just sounds differently. But if you could, describe kind of again that first chuckle versus this chuckle, that would maybe help.
Yeah. So the first chuckle is pretty quiet, and I'm not trying to reach out there like 200-300 yards. I'm trying to visualize. I want the chuckle to go like 75, maybe 100 yards. So pretty quiet like this. And then your next one would be more like this. So almost double, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In volume. And then literally I'll just sit back down and wait another 4 or 5 minutes, see if something's going on. Usually in that time, especially the areas that I'm going in, because these are areas that I scout, you know, all summer long. So I know there's going to be elk in there. So at this point, usually when I've went into one of these spots, you pretty much get some kind of reply or an answer, or you'll hear a bull raking a tree down, you know, a couple hundred yards down or 200 yards down from you. And then you can kind of, you know, make a game plan on what's going on there now. You know, if he's raking a tree, he's advertising for you. So especially if he's chuckled, he's already advertising to your cows to, hey, come on down here because I'm probably a bigger bull. So anytime a bull answers you like that, whether it be a bugle, raking a tree, something like that, keep in mind he's always advertising for the cows for the most part.
Okay.
Got it. And that's what he's going to kind of do. He's not going to rake a tree and get ready for battle with you. He's trying to show how awesome he is to any other cows. And also, if he's got cows with him, he's trying to display to those cows that he is awesome, and he doesn't want those cows leaving him to come up to me to come check that chuckle out. So you kind of have to think in terms of, I guess, more into what an elk would be thinking. And I know it sounds silly to think that way, but it's like, how do we know what an elk is thinking? But, you know, you just
gotta spend time in the woods with them.
You just gotta spend time with them and kind of put yourself in their shoes as to what's going on this time of year, you know. And it's just like us, you know, if your girlfriend's talking to another guy, you're kind of wondering what's up, right? Uh-huh. So the elk are no different. You know, if those cows are starting to go the direction of that other guy that's chuckling, that bull's going to be wondering, okay, what's up with this, you know? So,
yeah. So we got bull coming in, scenario taken care of. Bull just kind of, that last one would be like that bull just kind of hanging out in the same area, right?
Yeah.
So you can always
tell a bull that's locating and looking for cows because he'll be moving, and the bugle all of a sudden will be way over to your right side, say 200 yards to your right, and then all of a sudden he bugles out in front of you, and then another 4 or 5 minutes later he bugles and he's way over on the left. So you can tell he's moved over from the right side in front of you and across in front of you to the left. So you know he's searching for cows versus the bull that's just advertising. He's pretty much staying in one spot saying, hey, I'm over here. You guys come over here and check me out. This is where I'm going to be. You know what I mean? Hmm. So that's how I kind of differ the two bulls. And that's really the two that you're going to run into, other than the bulls that have cows and they're going between feeding and bedding areas. You know, there's going to be a lot more cow talk, and he's going to be, you know, bugling, trailing them up and stuff like that. But that's a whole different scenario.
And I think
the first two.
I think a really important one to include, because that seems to be my morning hunts and my evening hunts of.
Yeah.
When we got that heavy amount of movement between when I found them and where they're going.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what's your approach in that situation?
That's when I like to do, most guys don't like it, but more of an ambush type style, because those elk are on the move already.
Mm-hmm.
So those are elk, honestly, so here how I would hunt something like that, you pretty much have to hunt them 2 or 3 or 4 mornings in a row to know, to try to pattern them, you know, like what they're doing.
Yeah.
So hopefully you have enough time to spend on an elk like that to do that, because that one, you can't keep up to an elk, especially in our bush here, by trailing behind them. I mean, they move so darn quick on the trails that you try to keep up and you're going to be running, trying to keep up to them. And it's just not physically, it's not physically doable because our bush is so darn thick. Mm-hmm. But what I like to do, once I've watched them a couple times, they're usually coming from a field edge or a pipeline where they're feeding, because we have lots of pipelines because of the oil field. But then we also have the logging. So a lot of those elk, they hang out, you know, in the cut blocks with the fresh growth and all that stuff. That's where they feed all night. And then they're going to be traveling, you know, usually it's back up the pipelines and through the bush up to the higher ground to where they're going to bed at. So it's just a matter of, they don't always bed in the same spot every time, but they're going to be really close. So if they're feeding in one cut block and say they're traveling to the west, you can pretty much guarantee the next morning they're going to be traveling to the west as well, and they're going to bed somewhere over there.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'll kind of do is I'll literally get kind of off to the side. I'm usually 100, 150 yards off to the side of them, and I'll wait. You can kind of hear that bull, because he's going to be bugling, keeping tabs on his ladies as they're traveling through. And he's just basically doing the roundup bugle, keeping the girls rounded up as they move to their bedding area. And he's just the bull following along, because the cows are leading the whole pack. So he really doesn't have to do anything but trail behind. So in that situation, I like to get out in front of those elk. Usually about 200 or 300 yards from where I think they're going to go, and hopefully I guess right. And I like to be on the game trails and kind of move up parallel to them. And I try to get as close to where I think the elk are going to go in front of you, like 75 yards in that area is a really good number for me to try to get parallel to them, to where I think they're going to cross in front of me. And then what I'll usually do, you'll hear those cows and calves, they're chirping and talking as they go by. I'll usually wait till the whole herd goes past for the most part. And then once that bull kind of gets parallel to your location, that's when I've been silent this whole time. That's when I'll literally give them a couple cow mews, and especially like more whiny one, like you're lost, something like that. So cow mew, something like this. Yeah, get on it a little bit more, be a little bit more demanding. Mm-hmm. And our elk, what that elk's going to do, he's not going to want to leave that one cow behind. So he knows his ladies are ahead of him going up the trail, going to where they're going to go. He's going to kind of swoop back around and try to grab that cow and bring her back into the herd. So make sure you have an arrow knocked at that time, because as soon as you make that sound, you know, you're only 75 yards away. That elk's going to cover that 75 yards, and honestly, he'll be in your lap in probably 10 or 15 seconds. It doesn't take long. He comes to the bush, he's coming to round up that cow and get her back in line. So right. It's pretty exciting. I mean, you hear them coming, and it's like, okay, they're coming, and you're anticipating what's going on and what's going to happen. And sometimes they just keep on going past you, and the bull doesn't give you no mind, no matter what you do. And other times he does exactly that, comes over and scoops you up.
And so talking about your previous thought of you found these bedding areas, those early season, just lone bulls, and we don't have the cows there. Is it that same process, your same go-to plan when you know you're just hunting lone bulls or those lone bulls, or maybe even still like a couple of bachelor bulls?
Yeah. So what I do with those ones, I'll have that area marked on my GPS so I can get pretty close to it. I'll usually try to bust in inside of 100 yards, and I don't try to get too much closer than that. You know, 75 yards is pushing it, 100 yards, that's pretty much perfect. And then all I'll do there is I won't do any cow sounds whatsoever. I'm just going to portray that I'm a bull that moved into his area. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start off with some really light tree raking, and then I'll throw in just a really quiet little chuckle. Just portray that I'm a bull that's advertising in, and being that I'm in his area, it's going to infuriate him right away. And he's going to kind of come over and want to push you out or check you out and see who you are. And a lot of those bulls, believe it or not, they don't bugle and scream at you. They just come silently walking over, but they'll literally come walking straight over to see who's in their area. You've done is just the bull sounds.
I've got a beautiful 6-point bull burned into the into my brain that busted me as I was raking. I saw him kind of walking across, just a lone bull pretty early in the season, just walking along a ridge line, covering ground a little bit, and I turned him with that raking. And it was an open country, and I don't know how. I just lost track of him. I don't know where he went, but he used the topography to sneak over, and sticks in my hand, hitting the tree. And then I look over and he's literally 10 yards away, just there. And I crossed my mind seconds before that, like, okay, that's enough. Stop. Pick up your bow and get ready. Seconds before that. And I can still visualize him. He was a narrow bull. His fourth, fifth, sixth were just like that perfect taper all the way down, just a beautiful look to him, and it just killed. It haunts me. haunts me.
That's exactly what happened. Because as soon as I set up in this little area, I'll kick the ground dirt so it's clear, fresh dirt, so I can actually move a little bit. Mm-hmm. I try not to kneel because our foliage is like waist high here, anyways. Like we got. Oh, rose bushes and devil's club and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'll keep the ground totally clear so it's bare dirt before I start raking and doing anything. And after I'm done kicking the ground, I literally have an arrow knocked at that exact time. And then I scan the whole woods, because just the act of you clearing your standing station there is enough to draw those bulls over. So. Sure. But I'll clear the ground, and then I'll really look around, scan, and then that's when I'll slowly go raking, you know, start really quiet and slow, just rake for maybe 10, 15 seconds, and then stop and grab your bull. And now you're scanning the whole wood line, can, especially where you know they're going to be coming from.
Yeah.
Checking my wind. I got my thermals wind checker. I'm checking the wind constantly. And, you know, you want to make sure your wind is good to hunt that spot. And then after I've scanned that area, I'll probably do another little session of just a little bit louder tree raking. And then I stop, your hands on your bow, and I'm literally scanning the whole area again. And if nothing's come out by then, that's when I'll kind of do a little chuckle. But I won't do the chuckle right towards the to his bedroom. I'll kind of like face away from it in the direction I want him to go, be traveling, you know. So if he's coming, if I know he's going to be coming from my left, I'll kind of do my chuckle over to the right just a little bit. And just trying to portray that I'm a bull that's just a little bit further away, you know. If I can fool him into thinking I'm 30 yards further away than what I actually am, mm-hmm. I know he's going to come walking right past me really, really nonchalant and not really thinking about anything.
Yeah.
So that's why I'll kind of throw my chuckle that direction. Even though he can still pinpoint my tree raking, he knows exactly where I was anyways. But you got to remember, I've raked the trees twice before that. Maybe I've moved off just that 20 or 30 yards, then I did the chuckle. So that's kind of what I'm pretending to have done. And I can't tell you, especially these first couple mornings, it's honestly my favorite time to go out, because for one, it's your best chance of calling in one of your biggest bulls of the season. And for two, those bulls have never been called to for the last year.
Right.
So they're honestly, I don't want to, they're not going to be dumb, but they're going to be naive. They're going to be the most naive that they'll be all season. You know what I mean? Because yeah. they haven't been fooled yet. And especially to tactics like that. Like nobody, most people just go in, they bugle, they wait 10, 15 seconds. Oh, no, nothing here. Didn't hear nothing. And they walk 100 yards and they bugle again. And they do it over and over, you know? This is really patient hunting. A lot of guys don't have the patience to do my kind of style of hunting. That's why it's kind of nice for me. It's what I like to do, and I really know it works. So
yeah, no, that, I can tell you, I don't, I really don't have the patience. Yeah. I can't get myself to slow down. I really can't.
Yeah.
and with that chuckling, that's a, explain that or translate that language for me a little bit. Is it you're not necessarily being aggressive, or does it have aggression in it? Is it always aggressive, or can it be just a communication thing?
You can get, if you go aggressive on your chuckle, that turns more into a grunt. So, and you'll hear that lots. Bulls will bugle, you know, fairly aggressive, and they'll grunt three or four times at you. How you tell it's a chuckle is they're a lot less aggressive, and a chuckle is like 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, they can chuckle 10 times if they want. So it's more, they're quicker and they're non-aggressive, and there's more of them versus the grunt, which is aggressive. You're getting really aggressive. Mm-hmm. That's when you know they've changed their tune to a different level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I go into the bedroom, I'm using a really non-aggressive, because I'm just trying to portray that I'm just happened to be a bull that moved through this area, raking a tree, you know, trying to call some cows and do a little chuckling, trying to call more cows, because you're looking for cows. You're trying to attract the females. And I'm just trying to do that in this bull's face and pretend that I don't even know he's there, you know, and, you know, it's just going to infuriate him, and he's going to have to come over, have a look and see who's this character that's in my zone, you know, calling to my girls. Like he's going to think those are his girls that are close to his bedroom. Like, how dare you come close to me? You know?
So, yeah. So are you ever adding in a full blown bugle?
Not really until later. I will throw in after I do the two rakes and I do a couple of sequences of the chuckles, and if nothing showed up, then that's when I'll do to come out of there, because either he's going to come out
Did you
during the raking and the truffling, or he's not there at all? Maybe he's moved off already and he's got girls already. So what I'll do is my last thing will be the little low note bugle, and it's pretty quiet. Everything I do in this whole situation, my raking is quiet, my chuckles are really quiet, and then my low note bugle is really quiet. So this would be the low note bugle that I do, and it's probably in volume wise to going 100% volume, I'm probably like 30% of what you can put out, how I would describe it. So it's kind of.
Okay, so not
that's literally all I would do.
Yeah, not too aggressive at all.
Not too aggressive, just literally, I'm literally going into the first little high note, then I drop it off into that low note. Just, and don't go at the very bottom, like at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just a like, just so he knows that you're actually a real bull. And it's like, okay, he's got a little bit of depth to him. That's what I'm trying to throw into the bugle, a little bit of depth. And then grab your bow and just hopefully he comes marching along looking for you. Sure. And if he does, you know, just let him pass by that tree where you can go to full draw. And when he gets past it, you know, give him a couple of cow mews to stop him and have your pin on him and let her fly. Because it's going to be close. Because you're gonna be in that little area. Most of the bulls that I've called in like that are within 30 yards. You know, they're 15. Most of them are like 25 yards when they go across in front of you. Because they want to see visually who you are, who dares come into their lair. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's pretty exciting.
I do enjoy doing a lot of cutting off too. I realize I think I get myself in more trouble than call more in because I really like to irritate them. That gets really fun. But I think there's times that you can screw that up and they like back down or they say, no, this ain't worth it and I'm leaving. Other times they're coming in so hot and they're just ready to go.
Yeah, that's right. And the whole time I'm listening to these bulls when they're calling, I'm trying to listen to what level of aggression they're actually at. You know, if they're pretty nonchalant, I pretty much stay pretty nonchalant. And if they won't come in, that's when you try to raise them up slowly into that next level. Because once you can work them up into that next level, you know, they start seeing fire in their eyes. Pretty good chance they're going to come in, you know. Unless he's got cows, and for some reason, if the cows don't like what you're saying, they're gonna start taking off and going out the backside. And unfortunately, that's when those bulls go follow them. They go with them, right?
So right.
That's their ladies. They're leaving. He's leaving. So people call those ones the runners. They're, you know, he'll bugle from 100 yards to you, and then the next time you hear him, he's 200 yards away. So you run up 100 yards, close that distance. Okay. Cool, I'm within 100 yards, I'll bugle at him again. Well, he bugles back and he's 300 yards away. You're like, crap, I just moved up 100. And you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it happens every year. But
yep,
so
absolutely.
That's just the dang cows taking them.
Yeah. Well, I really like this calculated approach. It's calculated, but yet you're fluid with what the mood is. And I think that gives some purpose and some structure to calling instead of being just willy-nilly. And I heard this one time, I heard this one time. So I tried it. Then I just threw out all my bag of tricks all at once. And and that's with a lot of folks, you might only get an opportunity. You only got one bull that you ever played with the whole season. Or that's because you're here for a week and you finally found some elk and you played with the one elk and then it just didn't work. You're using your whole toolbox and it's not a screwdriver. It's not a screwdriver you were looking for. So I like that approach and I don't even want to add any more because whenever I listen to a podcast that adds too many structure or too many styles that it's too overwhelming. So I really like this style, and I think it'd be a good spot to just call it. But that's a patience game that you're playing, and I can tell that. So it's a something we many of us young folk need to learn is the patience game. It's kind of like the old timer when you're going on a fishing trip. He disappears and sits in one spot for a little while, and he's always the one that pulls in a big walleye or something. While the youngster is running around all over the place trying different lures and this and that, and doesn't catch a whole lot. Old timers always know best.
Yeah. And honestly, that's how I came to my tactics, because there's so many hunters that are all around us. I can sit down in one of my spots and be calling to a bull, and I'll hear someone coming with a bugle or a cow call, and that elk will literally shut up. And it's not for about, I go quiet and I'll let that other hunter go past me if he's on a line or on the road, calling from a road or somewhere. I'll usually let those hunters go by, and those elk won't start responding for at least a good half an hour after that guy's gone already.
Yeah.
And so in that scenario, I don't say anything. I don't try to get him to talk before he really wants to. I'll literally just keep quiet. And when he's ready to tell you that he's ready, he'll fire off on his own. And then I know, okay, the game is back on. Let's start talking with him again.
Yeah. So I've seen that same thing with four wheelers going by, working an elk, and he's talking, and the four wheeler goes by and he shuts up, and it's like, okay, we gotta wait a little while. And then even if they strolled up, let out a bugle or something, heard nothing, and then they moved on. So then you just waited in the woods, things started happening again, and you're back on your hunt. Kind of, it's ruined it a couple of times, but sometimes it works out.
That's right. It's almost like he doesn't want to play with those other dudes. He wants to play with you because he was doing his thing with you already, and he liked it. He was having fun. Because I always think, okay, these elk think it's a game of cat and mouse, and I truly think it's a game to them, because they can fool us whenever they want. I know they can, and I just think they have fun playing with us, just like if you're playing with your dog with a ball or something. I think these elk like playing with other elk, like they're fooling around, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of another good thing to think about is, once they start communicating with you, it's the game is on with you. And if someone else comes in, they're just going to disturb it for a little while, and then you can come back and get your game going again. So
yeah,
kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't even have a elk tag this year, but I'm not far from elk country. I'm a nice little half-hour drive, and I can get into some elk. So I think I'm just going to be going and learning. Just going to learn. And
absolutely. Go out there and just take your camera and take pictures of anything, and call to them and have fun and play with them. And honestly, you'll learn so much that will go into your next hunt next year or the year after. You'll be like, man, it's the more you can call in. And honestly, I have more fun with the smaller 2 or 3 or 4 points, calling those guys in, because they're not scared to play with you, and they'll hang out because they're pretty naive. They'll hang out and play with you for a half an hour, 45 minutes in some situations.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, throw everything you can at them. Like, if you have the ability to chuckle and throw an advertising bugle, or if you can lip ball, do a lip ball to them and see what the reaction is, and just soak it all up. That's what I try to try to tell everybody. Just when anytime you can play with an elk, just play with them for as long as you possibly can and soak it all up and really put it in your memory bank of what he did, what he liked, what he didn't like, and what did he do? Did he walk right past you, or did he come around? Did he go away from you? You start playing with these elk, they'll work their way right around you, so they're downwind of you. And I've had elk literally come right up to me on a 6-foot willow on the other side of me. I've had them eating the leaves and stuff right off the other side of the willow, and they're directly downwind of me. I know full well that they can smell me, and like, we're stinky critters, and they're not even scared. It's like they don't even care. So it's pretty neat.
That's a good approach, and I like it. So we'll share this before most of the people in the lower 48 are going to start their elk season. But yeah, there's I know there's a couple early seasons across the West here that people can get into, including you up there to yeah, be able to get into them as soon as a couple of days from now. So,
well, that'll be the fun part, because I get to hunt Alberta for the first couple of weeks of September. And then actually I'm going to hunt with the Elk Bros. The second part, well, I'll be actually in New Mexico from the 16th of September till about the 26th.
Oh man.
I'll be hunting with you out there in New Mexico. So I'm anxious to get out there and test my skills against those bulls that they got. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be interested to hear what the difference is. And
yeah, absolutely.
Totally different.
Make sure you give me a shout after September and we'll rehash this little chat we had.
Absolutely. What happened. Absolutely. So real quick, again, plug your calls and where people can find you and that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So again, it's Wapiti River Outdoors. We're up in Grand Prairie, Alberta, and basically WapitiRiverOutdoors.com will get you to our website. And you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook and all that as well. Pretty easy to find.
Yep.
Wapiti's WAPITI. And it's a little bit tricky for some people to spell. So, yeah. Just WapitiRiverOutdoors.com. And you can find us there and get a hold of me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. And good luck in just a couple of days.
You bet. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Got a deed to the land, but it ain't my ground. This is God's country.